So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
Michael Hayes, he must have thought he saw a lot more than he saw because the foot just kind of glanced off the rope. Well, he's getting so frustrated in this event. Well, Hayes has just really lost his composure. He's lost his composure completely. He wants Carey to get out on. Put the pin on Flair. What is he? Hayes has just really kind of lost his composure here. He's telling Kerry Von Erich to put a pin on Flair after Hayes knocked him down. Hayes has just. And now Hayes is going out. Hayes going out the door. Here comes Ric Flair again. Oh, Kerry Von Erich hit in the head with a cage door as Gordy threw it too, and Kerry Von Erich smashed by the cage door, leaning over the rope. Hayes now comes back in. Flair. Well, Hayes has certainly taken this match. One, two, and now three. Hayes missed again. Hayes has just totally lost his cool.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting.
Yeah. Yay.
Woo! Wei, this was the one week where I thought, we're not going to make it. We're not going to get to do it. You seemed like a defeated man today. You hinted at it on Review of Raw that you didn't have the best Monday. Why don't you let people in on... How are you feeling right now?
I'm fine. Yeah, no, I'm good.
You just blasted through three episodes of World Class Championship Wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And after... Christ, close to 3 hours. How awesome is that theme song that comes in and out of every break? Dun, dun, dun.
Jeez. I didn't even really notice it, to be honest with you. I think it's my fault. You know, I tend to leave these shows for Review Away until the very last minute, meaning Sunday nights, to watch. And this week... I think it was unfortunate because, well, first of all, let me just say I was expecting this week to be a bit of an easier week because these shows were actually something that I was actually curious about.
Uh-huh.
World Class Championship Wrestling, after hearing you talk about it so much and, you know, them being each only at an hour long, even at three episodes, I didn't think it would be that much. So I got set to watch these shows on Sunday night. And, you know, I've been able to get on the network through my... through a listener's password.
Yeah, the Canadian way.
Graciously offered. And also through this IP blocking thing. So I've had no issue so far. I watched certain things on it. But for whatever reason, last night, I couldn't. Just didn't work. In fact, I kept getting the TV rating little video. That's the fucking song that I'm sick of. Anytime you watch the WWE Network and they show the little what it's rated, they yes. have like a little 5-second video showing you if it's TV MA, TV PG, and then it plays a little.
It's a beautiful sound.
So that played fine, but when it came to the video, in this case, World Class Championship Wrestling itself, it just wouldn't load. You know, and sometimes if it would load, it would load maybe for 5 seconds, and then it would always tell me that Shockwave Flash has crashed. Why this thing is still using Flash in 2014, I don't know. But I use a Mac, and as you know, Flash and Macs, or maybe you don't know.
I don't know.
Flash and Max don't really go play well with one another. And I imagine, I don't know, maybe the fact that it was on an IP blocker and also somebody else's account that I don't actually own, maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But whatever. I tried. Just wasn't working last night. So I messaged John. Hey, John, I won't be able to watch the show tonight. Do you want to record this later, like some other time? And he said, John said, sure. John, by the way, is very patient, very accommodating throughout this whole process. But basically, I expected to come into the office today and basically kind of, you know, rush my way through. I figured it was something to do with the internet at home, maybe, or just my older computer. So I tried to watch it at work today.
Already a sign of trouble when you were hoping that our work internet would come through big time.
Well, our work internet is...
it's horrible.
My fucking 56.6K modem with this dial tone was probably faster.
You can't appreciate how bad it is here.
It sucks, man. Remember when we used to do live and whatever. So I get to the office. I try to watch it on the PC at the office. And same thing.
Oh, this was on a PC you had problems with too.
I have a Mac at the office as well, but I tried that first, yes. And I figured, okay, well, I mean, why don't I just try the PC? The PC was even worse. It loaded the da-na-na, and then nothing, just the rotation. It was weird because sometimes it would play, and then afterwards, even if it does play, it would start skipping 5 seconds like at a time.
I started watching this on your MacBook after we would make a switch. I've never seen this before, and my God, I would have broken this computer if it continued. It would be like cuts throughout the match. It would just skip. There was a match it's like an 8-minute match that I watched in 15 seconds.
It would skip like whole minutes. Not even that. At the very least, like, I even considered, okay, maybe I'll just watch a show like this.
Watch the whole thing in 10 minutes.
I'll get the quick version. But even then, I kept trying to start the playhead from the beginning, and it just wouldn't allow me. And I'm sure, like, everybody who's ever used a shitty computer in their life or has had shitty internet has gone through this, where all you want to do is just, like, move the little cursor to the beginning of the video, and it just won't.
That's a problem with the WWE Network player that drives me nuts. Okay. Is Fight Pass, you can just direct it to whatever second of the video you want, whatever. It has like a time marker. On this, if you're watching a show and you say you're watching the countdown show and it's an hour, and you want to take a break, you come back and you've turned it off, you got to, like, guess where you were and just hope it comes close to there. I hate the tracking thing.
Well, yeah, it's not even that, though. Like, for me, I kept dragging it to the beginning, and I'd wait for it. It's like you tell the computer to do something, and then you just have to wait, like, 15 seconds before it responds. So I just kept getting that, and then it would freeze, and then I would hit a refresh on the browser, and I'd get the da-na-na, and then it'd be the same thing over and over again. This went on, like, this took up, like,
this was your whole day, yeah, essentially.
It was just awful, and by this point, it was, like, sometime in the afternoon, half my day was already gone, and I still hadn't started these 3 hours of world-class championship wrestling. So at this point, I messaged John, hey, John, I'm losing my mind here. I didn't say that, but
it very much came through in your tone.
My tone was just basically that way. And then I asked John if he was having the same issues, and John says, nope. Like, for some reason, it works perfectly on your Asus laptop.
Hey, man, don't knock the Asus.
Yeah, I won't. But at the same time, I know how attached John is to his computer. It's his only computer, and he does basically everything on it. So I even felt bad asking you to borrow your computer. I didn't know if you'd be okay with that. But John offered.
You were the only one, Wei. The only one I would give this up to for the entire day. I was very unproductive today, but it was okay. I got to catch up on other stuff.
So John had to basically sacrifice his whole day just so I could watch these 3 hours, and that's how I spent the last. I mean, they're 3-hour shows, but for whatever reason, it takes me even longer to do it. And I'm guessing because of the shitty internet here, I had to wait a long time, and I was just so tired. Again, it's my fault. I was just tired, and I just kept dozing off.
Well, way to get you through. I got you a gift.
Oh,
to get us through this review.
Oh, beautiful!
Your prized beer of choice.
Hey, thank you. John got me a Hoegaarden, which I brought to you.
Not
to
just
your
a
place.
Hoe garden, but a bottle opener as well.
Yes.
I thought well ahead.
Well, listen, this is one of the rare occasions where we're doing one of these reviews.
Oh, dear God.
After a pot, the day's done. It's almost 7 o'clock.
Oh,
right now.
Oh dear God!
Uh-oh.
Don't explode on me here.
No! Don't open it yet. Just like flick it a few times. Let the air come out. That's what. Yeah, just let the bubbles come out.
All of them.
Whatever, man. Just open it.
Well, no, it's gonna explode.
This is terrible radio, isn't it?
If only we had a...
Just open it, man. Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
No harm, no foul.
No, you didn't pull a Devon. So yes, cheers. Cheers to...
Here's to world-class technology from the WWE. Now, actually, we can't really blame the WWE Network.
I don't know. I feel like I can. Because if there are any other Mac users, who I'm sure there are many, please let me know if you have a similar experience. Because I don't know what the issue is, but I'm almost like hesitant to do another show that's only exclusively available on the network.
Oh, I think we should avoid the network for a while after this one.
Because this whole process has just been – this day has just been abysmal. But if it's just me, please help me out. Let me know what I'm doing.
Help
wrong.
Out Way, because believe me, today was not a ringing endorsement for – today was a big win for the PCs in my world over Apple.
But the thing is, you know, like these experiences will probably vary across everybody.
You'll get some very defensive people, because I've noticed whenever I've said anything negative about the network, I get bombarded by people who are just, man, don't knock the fucking WWE Network.
Okay,
it's great.
Who cares? Who cares about those people? But I'm just saying, like, the thing about any type of internet streaming technology is that I feel like you'll never be able to satisfy everybody, because there's always somewhere someone's going to have a shitty system, shitty internet thing that they won't be you won't be able to predict. And that's sort of the shitty thing about it, is that, yes, it's a great technology, but unlike TV, you know, you have one standard where things don't really mess up. There aren't as many variables to fuck
unless
up. Your,
unless your hard drive fucks up on your DVR.
Yeah, well.
But I'll say from my end, having watched 22 UFC fights on Fight Pass on Saturday.
It's crazy.
I was raving about Fight Pass. It was seamless problems.
Okay.
It was great.
Good.
So there you go. That is us up to speed. Are you ready? Are you ready to chat about
ready
these?
Ready to do this. I have my handwritten notes.
Oh, my God. Look at this.
I was just saying, like...
Shorthand.
Forget technology. I'm done with you. Done with screens. Done with electricity. Forget electricity.
Can you imagine if you took your notes and then your computer, like, short-circuited or something? You lost your notes or something? That would just be the cap off to the
I
day.
I think I would...
Actually, that'd be worse, because it would have been my computer that would have short-circuited, which is a very real possibility. This thing isn't a spring chicken.
Plays the network great, though.
How do you like my computer, though?
It's kind of disgusting.
What?
It's heavy.
It's really heavy.
I feel like there's like...
You can't put your hand on the left side, because you'll burn your hand off.
There's a lot of dust, but it works great for the network.
Wait,
I am certainly grateful for it today.
This is all I've got right now.
Well, it's fine. It's great. It's great just the way it is.
It's no MacBook, I guess.
But it plays the network way better than a flashy MacBook.
That is true. We're going to review three episodes of World Class Championship Wrestling, the December 14th, 26th, and 28th 1982 editions of the show. Why those three? Because that coincided with easily the most famous angle in the history of that promotion. It would absolutely explode the territory, and that's what it all built up to. And we'll start off with December 14th, 1982.
Well, first of all, before we get into this, can you tell me a little about how WWE got to acquire this footage?
Yes, they bought it. Kevin Von Erich owned the rights to the footage and sold it off to the WWE back in 2005 for about $250,000. So made a nice chunk of change.
Is that a good deal, you think?
I think so. For a tape library, I'd be pretty happy with $250,000.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the promoters back at this time, I mean, they had no clue this stuff would be worth anything. That's why so many promoters, it was just, I'd tape over last week's show with this week's show.
I remember we used to air Wrestling at the Chase, the St. Louis territory, back here at the Fight Network, and that was actually one of my first tasks as an intern was to cut that footage And the footage that we received was like, it was something, it was like as if Larry Matisic himself had like recorded it off of a VCR. And he would like also.
You say that, that's very well what yeah. probably some of them are. It was just taping it off of TV at the time.
And he would like hit pause during the, in the middle of the commercials too.
I can't have those commercials in there.
But the thing is, it would cut off. Like sometimes you would hit it too early, and then, and so it would cut off like the bumper. Sometimes it would just like he would miss it coming back, and this is like the only recorded history I imagine of this, you know, the stuff that, that features, you know, people like Ric Flair and
Fight Network owns the library for.
Do they? Do we still?
Yep,
we sure.
We still own it.
Okay. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Our old editor Brent, he was a huge fan of Larry Matisic.
Side saddle suplex, DBS.
Maybe one day we'll go back. We'll watch some wrestling at the Chase.
Sure, why not?
Well, yeah. So it was 2005 that Kevin Von Erich sold this to the WWE, and that's when they were launching 24/7. So they were very much in a tape buying mode, and they were buying all these different tape libraries at the time to stack up on content at the time.
And how large is this entire library?
I mean the Southwest Sports, I mean, they were in business until 80, because it was like in the late 80s when they got absorbed with Continental Wrestling and kind of merged together. But I mean, throughout the 80s, they were running TV, like right up through what would eventually morph into the USWA. So the late 80s.
And this network, like, are they slow, you know, basically starting from the beginning? And
I think they're starting with the earliest that they have, which would be mid 82. And I noticed on the network, there's some weeks that they don't have it there where I imagine the episode just doesn't exist.
Right.
And they're up to like May of 83 right now. And that was 83, 84. That was the peak of the territory, and then it was like mid 84 where there was the first death with David Von Erich, and then after that Mike and then Chris, and
yeah.
it started to become a very, like, the audience suddenly, I mean, this whole territory, it was based around the Von Erichs, who were just like these idols to these teen girls, and then suddenly this territory really accumulated a death count, and it was it started to turn people off.
That was certainly one thing where, you know, I started to watch this show by the time I actually got it to work, and I started to get into it, and I was like, wow, this is actually really good. But then, like, I did a lot of reading again on the whole family and just the tragedies, and it's certainly, yeah, watching it back puts a very tragic kind of dark cloud over everything that you see.
Yeah, and it goes beyond just the Von Erichs. I mean, there's a lot of – this was a territory where it was based on young talent getting over and – experiencing fame that they had never experienced before. Like you had Hayes and Gordy, who had been successful in other territories, but you're looking at all these guys in their young 20s making money. You're in this central hub of Texas where you are famous all across town, and with that comes everything else that comes with that fame, and that was drugs, that was women, and it was it's an amazing territory to look back on. I'm always fascinated by going back to world class. So yeah, I was looking forward to watching these episodes because I've watched very little world class outside of the documentaries that are out and hearing from people that were involved in the territory. But actually getting to watch this way, seeing the production side of things, my favorite are the crowd cutaways to some of these fans who, my God, they lived and died by these people. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah.
Screaming at the top of their lungs. They were, like, attacking the Von Erichs as they would come down the entrance. There's no barricades. They just go up. Yeah. They try to rip their jackets off.
Yeah. Like, imagine, like, a whole crowd of Brock Lesnar fans or the guy, the Undertaker guy with the big bulgy eyes. Imagine like a whole crowd of those people.
There's a Twitter account dedicated to just crowd shots of world class fans,
wow.
And it's just fans, like, someone just watches it and they take screenshots of these fans who, it's like, they got homemade shirts for Kerry Von Erich. They're just yelling to come on. Is great.
That's
men
amazing.
And women, and so many teenagers that they drew here to the Sportatorium on Friday nights in Texas. Like, it was incredible that they drew these numbers to, like, first of all, in Texas, where football was a staple of Friday night sports, and here they are drawing these teenagers on a Friday night to the Sportatorium, and then they'd watch it. It would air on the set. They had a Saturday night show and a Sunday morning show in Texas, and they did huge numbers, and it would explode like right after this angle in 82.
That's really cool. And then, you know, I feel like there's so many comparisons about how MMA is sort of now the real version of what pro wrestling was back then. But even at an MMA show, you never see people get into it like this level.
Yeah. I mean, these were just like heroes to these young fans who just they really did feel like a pop star right now, kind of the reaction they would get. You know what I mean?
But these were, except instead of like teenage girls screaming, these are like grown men.
No, there were tons of like mixed of both. This has to be the most like girls we have heard in a crowd that we have reviewed a show of.
Yeah. Yeah,
these shrieks, they could not have been from men predominantly.
You'd be surprised.
Wow. Bill Mercer opens the show. What did you think of Bill Mercer?
I thought he was excellent.
I love Bill Mercer.
He was a tremendous broadcaster.
Legit, like, news background and then did wrestling as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he basically handled the entire broadcast. He not only was the host at the desk, he basically did the commentary solo by himself, and I thought did tremendous.
Unfortunately, you missed in some of the earlier episodes in 1982, he does it with this football player named Jay Saldi,
okay,
who is maybe the worst color commentator I've ever heard. He was so terrible.
Like worse than Art Donovan, who is actually not bad, who's actually great for many.
Art Donovan was funny. I would say Jay Saldi was a bit, but just like, well, Bill, we're going to watch Kerry Von Erich because Kerry Von Erich wants to get some revenge tonight. And he was just goddamn wood.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about Jay Saldi. And these shows, much better with Bill Mercer just doing it solo.
Well, I think there's such an art to, like, because let's be honest here, the commentary in pro wrestling is acting, is a form of acting. You know that this stuff is scripted, but you have to speak as if this was all real, and I think there's an incredible skill to that. And, you know, just even your little impression there, that to me sounds like somebody who knows this is fake and is there, you know, just trying to make it seem real. But you really have to believe in it, and I totally got that sense with this guy.
The first episode features, they start off with Bill Mercer opening up the show and previewing the matches for tonight, including David Von Erich going up against the Great Kabuki, and they showed highlights of their first match, which featured a run-in by the Magic Dragon to help the Great Kabuki, who were two of Gary Hart's wrestlers, and then Kerry making the save. And that would be our main event later tonight for the All-Asian title. They knew you were coming, Wei.
Yes.
They booked accordingly. And Mark Lawrence is our ring announcer. In our first match, Brian Adias, who was legitimately one of Kerry Von Erich's best friends in high school, and thus got a role in world-class championship wrestling against Killer Tim Brooks, who was a guy that Dan Lavransky got to become very good friends with a few years ago at the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Wow.
It was him and Gary Hart, and Dan interviewed Gary Hart, and he ended up just being adopted by these two for the couple of days we were there. They did some extracurricular smoking, and the highlight being Dan coming to me and saying, man, I just walked in to Killer Tim Brooks' room, and he's laying naked on the bed reading a newspaper.
Wow.
So there's a visual for this one.
What an experience.
With Killer Tim Brooks. And there was another great story from that, where the Missing Link, who would also be a main staple in world class, odd dude, he lectured Dan on not wearing a tie for the interview, and then later he goes up to Killer Tim Brooks, the Missing Link, and he says, you know, Tim, I hope I'm not being offensive, but you really need to watch your weight. And Tim Brooks goes,
huh.
Well, I hope I'm not being rude when I tell you to mind your own fucking business. Just great. Oh. It was that was the highlight of that Cauliflower Alley trip. It was getting to hang around Gary Hart and, to a lesser extent, Tim Brooks. But Mouth was just with them the whole week. It was great.
As they insult each other.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. Brian Adias and Killer Tim Brooks. We had a boom microphone at ringside, Wei, and were you paying attention to some of the production elements of
Actually,
this?
Actually, I didn't notice that.
There was a guy, they had someone with a boom mic, mm-hmm. like right at ringside, and I mean, this is a staple of today's pro wrestling production, but, you know, having guys at ringside shooting, that was completely novel at the time and world class, as opposed to just the big hard camera.
Oh, is that right?
And it just, they talked about this extensively in the two world class documentaries. One was a WWE one, one was a non-WWE one, about the fact that this was, a lot of it was Bill Mercer coming from news and just coming up with different ideas. And they worked with a guy named Mickey Grant, who was a producer, and Keith Mitchell, Dan Bynum, who's actually works for Ring of Honor now. And it was just this idea of like bringing you closer to these wrestlers and coming up with different ideas. And one of it was shooting guys at ringside with handheld cameras.
I didn't realize that, because I think I take so many of those things just for granted.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every channel has, or every wrestling show has multi-camera. But you're right. Like, in a lot of older footage, you really just see the hard camera and nothing else. So, yeah, that's amazing.
Yes. And you'll notice a lot of these matches, like, very short, and there was this big idea at the time with World Class that they wanted to make it more so about the personalities, make the ring entrances very big and elaborate.
There weren't any entrances, though.
They would show – the main eventers were the ones that got theme music, and right, the other ones didn't.
Oh, you're right. You're right, yes.
But for a lot of it,
So even that was unique to World Class at the time.
Yeah. Theme music, I mean, it did exist before World Class, but certainly popularized here in World Class at the time. The match saw Tim Brooks
Sorry. I'm just having thoughts. Like, you know, like, between that – between, like, let's say 1982 and – I don't know, let's say like 2000, there's that much evolution, okay? Not only did you have theme music, but you also had videos, now you had pyro, now you had lighting. Why hasn't wrestling evolved at all in the time since to much, you know, really any degree?
I think there's a very safe formula that a lot of these wrestling promotions, I mean, WWE has been attached to this look. And I think a lot of that has to do with here, you had Bill Mercer, you had Mickey Grant, you had fresh people with fresh ideas. Mm-hmm. In WWE, it's been Kevin Dunn for the past 3 decades, essentially. And it's his vision, and it's a very safe look. Yeah. It's a very comfortable look for people at home. They know what to expect with a WWE broadcast. And with that, I think there's very little resistance to changing.
Yeah.
There is resistance to change. Yeah. And I mean, I've spoke about it before with Court Bauer and Alex Greenfield. They made a big push that they wanted SmackDown to have a separate director at the time, away from Kevin Dunn, who ixnayed that. But they wanted SmackDown to look and feel different, which was the whole point of the brand split. But that was not seen through. And the result is kind of just, I just think it's a very static look that they've had for a long time. And yeah, I would like to see some you know, play around with some stuff.
I also wonder if, you know, because of the territory system, you had so many different systems, so many different shows, and obviously so many different directors. Whereas now, basically, Kevin Dunn controls – I mean, you got TNA, but even the people involved with TNA and basically anybody growing up as a wrestling fan over the past 2 decades has one look in mind, and that's the look of the WWE.
Yeah, I think that's what people look at as the blueprint, and that's what everyone's got to have, a Titantron, a ramp, and that's just the way wrestling is done.
Yeah.
Not much to this match. I mean, basic as basic can be. I mean, you go back here, there was a belly-to-back takedown by Brooks. The mic actually picks up a Diaz, like, selling, and, like, can actually hear what he's saying.
I wonder if there was much resistance to you know, such close angles, and especially the mic.
Oh, I'm sure there was by some, like, who would call things in the ring and be worried about what would be picked up, especially you consider the time period here. I'm sure there was by veterans. Diaz begins his comeback with a pair of drop kicks. Brooks then gets on top of him with a pin and grabs the ropes and pins him at 527. And they cut to this old man yelling, "No, no, no." I love this stuff.
Yeah.
I love
they're
it.
They're very into it, these fans.
And this also featured Dave Manning, who was the very popular referee, and then you had the veteran referee, and Bronco Lubitsch, who comes in to tell David Manning it was an illegal tactic, and Brian Diaz is awarded the match by disqualification because Tim Brooks held the rope for leverage.
Hmm.
So it was reversed.
It was very simple. Very simple everything.
Yeah, a very basic match. Nothing, as much as you can romanticize certain things about this time, I mean, The wrestling could leave a lot to be desired, depending on who was in the ring. Mm. Bill Mercer then throws to Gary Hart, who is with another heel manager named Armand Hussein. Even back then, you knew the name Hussein. That would have to mean heel.
Yeah.
And Gary Hart is asking Armand, he's interviewing him, if Armand Hussein got involved in the match involving David Von Erich and Great Kabuki and maliciously got attacked by David Von Erich. Hussein says how David was using a choke instead of a sleeper and therefore had to get involved. Hart says how he appreciates the honesty, and Hart says, well, basically they just set up the rematch for tonight. And the angle at this point involving the Von Erichs and Gary Hart, just to lay this all out, because this had been weeks and weeks building up to this Flair-Von Erich match, was that Kerry Von Erich had this big match with Ric Flair earlier in the year, and they were building to the rematch, but Kerry Von Erich legitimately needed to have knee surgery. So they came up with a storyline where Von Erich had been attacked by someone, and the Von Erichs got proof that Flair had paid off Gary Hart with a bounty to get the Great Kabuki to attack Kerry Von Erich and paid him $10,000, and it was this big drawn-out thing where they finally figured out Ric Flair paid for Kerry Von Erich to be attacked, and now he was coming back for this rematch on Christmas night, and that's how Gary Hart figured into this.
This is like the Tonya Harding situation before.
Yes,
Tonya Harding.
Yes, it was.
Who would you say was the more push star between Kerry and David?
At this time, I mean, they were really like pretty close. You had both had gone for the title against Ric Flair. I would say David was the slightly bigger star because he had gone to other territories as well. He had gone to St. Louis. He had gone to Florida and then come back to Texas at that point. But, I mean, Kerry, as you can tell from these shows, incredibly popular. It was mm-hmm. it was David and Kerry and then, to a lesser extent, Kevin underneath them. But it was a lot of them working six-mans. It was really built around the Von Erich family trying to get the NWA title. That was the storyline of the promotion.
Right.
Like, Fritz could never win the title during his career, and his sons were bred to become NWA champions.
What a great story.
And that would be that would ultimately peak in 1984 when one of them would finally win it. But that was basically the whole promotion was the chase.
I didn't win the title, but here I had children specifically with this goal in mind.
Yes, yes. Bill Mercer says how David learned the sleeper hold from his father, Fritz, and David is at ringside and cuts a promo insisting that he knows what hold he used. It was a sleeper and not an illegal choke. I would love a Gracie breakdown of a sleeper hold versus a choke, because I was always of the impression that a sleeper hold puts you to sleep because it's a choke.
Yeah.
And a sleeper should technically be illegal, shouldn't it?
I suppose the argument is, you know, one cuts off the blood. I suppose that one
could
be
a blood choke.
Blood chokes are legal, and I guess trachea windpipe chokes would be illegal. But in at least in UFC, I think they're both legal.
Maybe we can have Elliot Baev come on the podcast and break down the sleeper versus choke argument.
In world class pro wrestling?
Yes, I'm sure he knows exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. Oh, right. David Von Erich and Armand Hussein's claim in 1982.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Next match was a kind of cult babyface, Bugsy McGraw, who I guess his gimmick was he was slow?
I don't know.
That was kind of how he was portrayed.
Okay.
And teaming with Al Madrill, who was our Spanish star of the territory, taking on Checkmate and the Magic Dragon.
The Magic Dragon, for what I could see through his what was exposed on it. Both of these guys were masked, by the way, the heels. Magic Dragon and
with Checkmate wearing a Checkmate tiger mask.
He
mask.
Basically just took Tiger Mask's mask.
Yeah. That was it. It was like a replica.
Yeah, but he called himself Checkmate. They billed him from what, England?
Yes. He was a British wrestler.
British wrestler, yes. And Magic Dragon himself, he did look like an Asian man. Terrible physique. Would not be allowed anywhere near a camera today.
No, probably not.
No.
This match was, well, they showed the highlight of a past match where Checkmate illegally struck Madrill while he was teaming with Wild Bill Irwin. Mercer identified Bugsy, of course, a man-child. Man-child.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you know, kind of big, buffoon, big bald buffoon.
I thought they might use the R word at this point in time in history.
Maybe.
Yes.
I don't know.
I always remember watching an old episode of Dallas, which would have been right around this time in the early 80s, where Pam is worried about a baby being, I don't know if it's her own baby or some other baby, but about problems with the child. And Pam's explaining how Bobby uses some word. It's like, well, the baby might be, he uses some term like
mongoloid.
Might have been, you know what I mean? And Pam's like, don't use that term. The baby would be retarded. Like, that's the politically correct word to use. And retarded would be the politically correct term. Anyway, I would have to go back and find that clip. The magic dragon applies a hammerlock, or sorry, gets a hammerlock applied by Madrill. Checkmate comes in, then applies the hammerlock. Cut to this old man who's proclaiming at the top of his lungs, go, Al, go.
It's all old men.
Old men. They
get to see a young lady.
There were lots. You could tell. Mercer warns everyone of the armadillo crouch of Checkmate, which is basically where he gets on all fours, like in and get, like essentially like in the fetal position, so you can't attack him because he's blocking his head and he's on all fours and you can't do anything with him.
Oh, interesting.
That was his big spot, armadillo crouch, which could easily make a comeback in 2014.
That's his guard.
Maybe Damian Sandow could introduce that. The armadillo crouch.
I like that.
Mercer states that the man-child, Bugsy McGraw, believes in freedom, both physically and intellectually. Whatever the fuck that means. They work over the left arm of Madrill as the heels are tagging in and out. The whole match is just working over Madrill's arm. Like, just time goes on forever here. And McGraw finally runs in, gets stopped by Bronco Lubitsch, who is just... He was not the greatest of referees. This guy, he would have to hold on to the rope when he'd go down to cover so he could pull himself back up. Not the most agile of referees.
It's a tough job.
It is. Madrill finally crawls away, gets the hot tag. 8 minutes into the match, McGraw is attacking both of the heels with forearms. He marches around the ring. And then we see one of the worst sunset flips ever out of the corner by McGraw to the Magic Dragon as Al Madrill makes the blind tag, and I believe he actually tagged Magic Dragon instead of his own partner here, as they showed the replay. Nonetheless, hits a sunset flip off the top rope to pin Checkmate at 9 minutes and 4 seconds. Pretty bare bones tag match. I mean, simple formula, babyface sells all match, hot tag, and then Madrill would come back and get the pin.
But I would say that sunset flip off the second rope, top or second rope, was probably one of the more impressive spots I saw.
Al Madrill was like a high flyer here by 82 standards.
There's no such thing as high flying, at least on these few episodes. What I did notice was, you know, when Bugsy got in for the hot tag finally, sometimes, at least today, you see maybe like a Daniel Bryan who's excellent at it, come in with his running knees, whatever, do all this stuff. No, not with Bugsy. Just really ridiculous old school offense, lots of dancing. And then, you know, the shimmying and then the light elbows that would send the guy flying back 3 meters. And then, wind-up punches, like shit like that.
Got to play to the last guy in the row.
Yeah. So, much safer style, I would say.
This was a room temperature tag that Madrill made to McGraw.
Yes. But it worked. I mean, people still went crazy.
You cannot deny how over some of these characters were. Like, it was just incredible the reactions some of them got, especially as you got higher up in the card. They come back from break. Bill Mercer explains the bounty that Ric Flair placed on Kerry Von Erich, injuring his knee, and announces they will meet at Reunion Arena in Dallas on Christmas night. And then they go and just hear from different talent about their predictions for the match. And this was when World Class really excelled with just personality pieces, sit-down interviews, on-site vignettes that they were really ahead of their time shooting at this point in time. We had King Kong Bundy, a very young King Kong Bundy, explaining that experience and desire of Ric Flair will win the match. Al Madrill, who we start off with a close-up on his Elvis Presley Love Me Tender shirt, says that Flair better watch out because Kerry will win. While Bill Irwin says Kerry doesn't have enough explosion to win. And then Bugsy McGraw discusses the will to prepare to win. That was his only key to victory. Checkmate explains how Ricky Flair is going to win the match if it's a pure wrestling match. Sorry, calls him Ricky Flair, but says if it's a pure wrestling match, Kerry will win.
I love these. This really reminds me of kind of what we do here at the Fight Network for big UFC fights, where we go to other UFC fighters and ask for their predictions on the big fights that weekend. And what it serves to do is build anticipation for that big fight. Here's something that, you know, not just fans are caring about, but their peers have an opinion on.
It encourages that debate for viewers of, okay, well, he thinks he's going to win. He brings up that point, and you have arguments for either side to win, and that just creates interest in who is going to win this match.
I absolutely love it. And again, it's something that seems so simple, yet I don't know why, you know, either WWE or TNA or even ROH really employ this tactic anymore.
No, just a lot of simple stuff that was just so effective. And this felt like wrestling detox for me watching this, of just basic, like, we're building to a big match. Yeah. It's Ric Flair, Kerry Von Erich, and that's what our TV is designed around.
I also love how pretty much all of these kind of felt really unscripted. Like, you know, they basically put a camera in front of their face and just said, hey, King Kong Bundy, cut a promo about this fight, go.
Yeah, there was a lot of that on these shows where it was just sometimes Bill Mercer would just make a mistake and just correct himself on the spot. It was unpolished, but it felt so
genuine
and so different. Like right now, like Michael Cole, it just feels like everything is so polished and practiced to a T.
You never get the sense that he would come up with something that he would say himself.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about even some of these little vignettes. It's just – it felt like these were the voices of the wrestlers themselves saying these things.
They re-aired a segment from the prior week, and I was so glad they did. This was the best part of the first show. It was a split screen with Ric Flair and Fritz Von Erich, who is in this purple plaid shirt. And it's Flair denying that he paid a bounty to Gary Hart to injure Kerry. Fritz is – saying he already had trouble. He has trouble responding to morons, and he has proof of the bounty, which will hold up in court. He says how his son should be NWA champion. They zoom out on Flair. Flair says he has a good reason to do anything he wants. He's upset how they keep calling Kerry the uncrowned champion. He's upset about it being a steel cage match. And Fritz is just losing his mind here, saying, if you were here, I'd grab you by the throat.
And hold it, you moron.
He's doing it in his gravelly voice.
He's got such a great voice and such a great presence.
And there's a reason he was doing the promo and Kerry wasn't. Yes. Fritz was an awesome promo.
Kerry Von Erich will soon have him back in this ring. And with the stipulations right now that have been added as a result of the proven conspiracy of Ric Flair, should be, very shortly, the new World Heavyweight Champion.
I tell you what I'm going to do. Put that camera back on me for a minute. And I wish I was in the same studio right now with you, Fritz Von Erich, and could look you right in the eye when you hear what I've got to say. And I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go one step further than anybody here on this television program expected me to do. Assuming that maybe I paid a bounty to get rid of your kid. Obviously, I've had good reason to do anything I wanted to do. You had a lot of nerve. He has a lot of nerve. The whole state of Texas had a lot of nerve calling him the uncrowned world champion because I wouldn't defend my title. Now you've gone as far as to put me, the most gorgeous human being and one of the greatest athletes alive, in a cage match in the reunion.
Hold it, you moron. Listen to me. If I was anywhere near you right now, I would be right there getting you by the throat. You would no longer be a contender yourself.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't be there.
Well, let me tell you something, all 6'7", 280 pounds of you. You got to remember one thing. You want the cage match. The NWA wants the cage match. Your kid wants the cage match. And brother, you look me in the face and remember this. You put me in a cage and try to take my life away from me. Someone's gonna get hurt.
The only attribute that you have to being world champion is that big, massive tongue. That tongue won't be a factor in that ring. Yeah. Partner, you can leave that in the dressing room. It'll be two physical bodies in that ring. Only one is coming out the champion. And I'm gonna end this asinine thing right here and now. My son, Kerry, will be the next world heavyweight champion. So enjoy it while you can.
And let me end this, my side of a one way, by saying this. I don't mind bleeding, and I don't mind sweating, and I don't mind paying the price to be where I am.
and Vanek! I'm talking to you, Kerry, and I'm talking to you, Fritz! You wanted the match! Now you accept the consequences, because this is going to stay mine!
Flair goes nuts here, talking about how Fritz is trying to take his life away in reference to the title, and Fritz proclaims his son will be the next champion. These two were excellent. What, I love this segment.
What I love is that, yeah, like, you know, just a short while after this, like, you watch a lot of 80s WWE, and everybody's screaming. Everybody starts off their promos screaming. What I loved about this was that they started off perfectly calm. Like, this was like an actual – presented like an actual kind of current affairs news program. They would just be talking, communicating with each other, or at least the host answering questions. And then it escalates. And that's when Fritz starts shouting, raising his voice. That's when Flair gets into Flair shouting mode. And it just makes the shouting so much more effective and makes you really pay attention. Like, oh, shit, these guys are pissed off about something. And, you know, I suppose it has to do with time too, you know, the fact that they're actually given this TV time to do it, rather than, you know, these days you're just given basically 2 minutes to cut a promo, if that. But I feel like if you're going to go the shouting route, and maybe this is like sort of a message for somebody like a Samoa Joe, who I feel like needlessly shouts for no reason, you got to really build into it to make it more effective. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and having watched some of the prior episodes to these three, I mean, they would have Flair on where he'd do a sit-down interview, and he's just the calm champion as he's being interviewed by Bill Mercer, and then he builds up to something like this where it's a confrontation, and yeah, very
great.
Very effective.
And it just makes you want to see this fight.
I would have been, after this promo, I'd be telling my parents, it's like, listen, after dinner on Christmas, I'm going to Reunion Arena to watch this cage match.
All the way from Toronto.
Yeah, I would get in a plane.
One of my favorite parts, though, was when they kept saying, you know, when they kept alluding to being in different areas, when it was so fucking obvious
they were in the same studio,
in the same room, just with different color backdrops, because you could even hear Flair's voice bleed into Fritz's mic. But the whole time they're like, if I was anywhere near you right now, I'd beat the shit out of you. And then they would both kind of like play that up. I just thought both of them just did such a good job of acting and pretending, to the point where you're amazed that they're talking about something that's fake and not an actual fight.
Yeah, it's just so tremendous.
It was a cool segment.
Main event was the Great Kabuki defending the All-Asian title against David Von Erich. Kabuki had Armand Hussein in his corner. David is escorted by police to the ring as fans are screaming for him. One girl goes up to kiss him. Just awesome here. This was featuring Bronco Lubitsch, where he would be grabbing the rope for the pinfall attempt to pull himself up. Von Erich misses a drop kick. Kabuki hits a chop off the second rope. They cut to the crowd as they're chanting, "Go, David, go," as he's selling. Kabuki puts this pressure hold on his armpit. And, of course, David Von Erich, all the Von Erichs, they would utilize the claw hold of their father, and that would be the big finish spot, and Kabuki is avoiding it. David eventually puts the claw in the abdominal, but Kabuki escapes from it. Kabuki applies a nerve hold. David finally gets up on his feet and gets out. Again, Kabuki blocks the claw, mounts him, and finally gets it, but this time he's under the rope, pulls him into the middle of the ring with the claw. Then David goes knee on belly with the claw hold.
Wow.
This was blue belt shit from David Von Erich. And then Kabuki gets his finger in the eyes of David and uses the green mist. The green mist is all over his hand and gets this green stuff into David's eyes. And then Hussein gets onto the apron, and Kabuki goes to blow the mist at David, who ducks, and the mist goes into Hussein, and the bell gets called at 7:58 for the disqualification. And Bill Mercer is all confused here, thinking that David Von Erich has won the title by disqualification. And we go to the break. I don't know if Mercer was genuinely confused or just didn't know the rules of professional wrestling, because when we come back from break, that's when Mercer explains that a title cannot change hands on the DQ, and maybe it was to just get the hopes up of the viewer at home that we had seen a title change. But nonetheless, that's how the match ends.
How prevalent was this all-Asian title?
I mean, this was just one of many titles that they used in World Class.
It seems like they had many titles.
They did have
like
many.
Like a title for every match type.
Yeah, it was a little boxing-influenced, I think, in World Class. But the all-Asian title stays with the Great Kabuki.
Okay.
Because it's only available for all Asians, I think.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, it was a, this match. It felt important, at least, you know. Like, I mean, I'm somebody who's never seen any world class, and it felt like this was somewhat of a spectacle. I mean, I've never seen the Great Kabuki before. I've heard a lot about him, and it's easy to see how he basically kind of created the blueprint for many Asian stereotypes in professional wrestling, even years later.
The Mist.
Yes, yes. So, no, that was cool, you know. Yeah, it was fun. I love the fact that they, coming back from break, would show replays of all this. It just all goes to kind of help make it feel, make what you saw feel important.
And then to close the show, we got closing credits to the drum roll instrumental of World Class Championship Wrestling. And some notable names in the credits. Keith Mitchell, producer at TNA. Dan Bynum of Ring of Honor. You got to see the whole, too many credit rolls in pro wrestling.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
So that was good episode stuff. Number one, setting up the Reunion Arena show, which would take place over the next two episodes, starting with December 26, 1982, the day after the big Star Wars event, which they were able to market their big shows as. Star Wars.
It's wrestling Star Wars.
Yes. So David and Kevin Von Erich start off the show with a promo talking about the six-man tag title match, because they're introducing a new set of titles, the six-man tag titles.
Six-man tag team titles.
Yes. And they said they're rooting for the Freebirds tonight, and they are not able to compete for the six-man tag titles because their partner, Kerry, is going after the NWA title against Ric Flair on this show. And basically wish the Freebirds good luck. And the storyline here was that Michael Hayes had been in the territory long, long time ago. And then the storyline was that him and David became friends in Florida together, and the Von Erichs and Freebirds were all good friends, and they were all coming back to Texas. David came back. Hayes returned a few weeks before this, along with Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts. So they were all basically friends, and that's how they're presented here. So the first match was Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, and they're in the ring to take on Mike and Ben Sharp of Hamilton, Ontario, and Tom Steele and their partner Buddy Roberts, they explain, couldn't get to Texas due to the weather coming from Colorado, and outruns David Von Erich, who says he's going to volunteer his body for them to go for the six-man tag title so that his friends Hayes and Gordy have partners.
Take my body.
Take my body.
I love the name Sharp and Steel.
Yeah, I know.
Great team name. Also great porn names.
Yes, Sharp and Steel.
Yeah, Mike Sharp. Iron Mike Sharp. Tom Steele.
I guess Michael Hayes, not as much. Though PS could have stood for porn star.
Yes. I feel like most porn names translate well to pro wrestling names and vice versa. Men and women.
We should also note that Michael Hayes wished everyone a Merry Christmas.
Oh, nice. Thanks.
Can you imagine going to a big wrestling show on Christmas Day? That used to be the big night for pro wrestling.
Sure. People do that with they might still do that. People do that with the UFCs. Maybe not Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve. Boxing Day?
Yeah.
Do that?
The UFC's year-end show. It's always the Saturday after Christmas.
Right.
So,
this is how people choose to spend family time.
Dude, if I had a hot promotion like World Class in my backyard, I'd have no problem going to wrestle for the big show of the year. You spend the day with your family and then you go watch some wrestling.
What about your family? Would they be into that?
By this time in the evening, spend the whole day with them.
It's about spending the entire day, all 24 hours.
You don't even celebrate Christmas.
No, but still, you should spend it with your family. Sleep in the same.
I spend like Christmas Eve with my family, and then Christmas Day, you open your presents, you have like a meal, and then you're on your way.
No, man, you should be having conversations. All that stuff is like.
What if me and my family went to World Class right after Christmas dinner?
Well, yeah, that's
all together.
That would sort of be the idea, but I don't think your family would want that.
I'm sure they would.
Okay.
I think my mom would love
more.
World
more
class.
Importantly, I don't know if people would like these wrestlers would enjoy working on Christmas Day.
No kidding, huge payday. I don't think they had any problem with it. As Ken Mantell would find out later on, huge payday.
Yeah, that's right.
So Mike Sharp starts the match. Babyfaces each take turns tagging in. Ben eventually comes in, misses with a knee drop to David, and Gordy gets in. The babyfaces then take turns with Tom Steele, real basic maneuvers, until David gets in and hits a pile driver to Tom Steele. Crowd is just into everything the babyfaces do.
Yeah.
Super easy crowds here.
And, you know, I hadn't even really seen much of the Freebirds prior to this, but it's really easy to see why they're considered one of the best tag teams because, I mean, here you have a guy in Michael Hayes who you can see why he's really stood out because, you know, first of all, because of his look, but also because of his charisma. And then you have all these other guys who, for the most part, just look pretty generic. Didn't really have any, you know, exciting talking style, nor really exciting look. Bodies weren't really nothing special. They're just kind of normal, average-looking wrestlers. And then you have this guy with this crazy hair. And I also thought he made, you know, his partner was sort of like, he was the flamboyant guy, and then Terry Gordy was the muscle. And I thought the two of them, you had personality and you had the legitimacy behind them, too.
Yeah, Michael, he was the talker. Gordy was the worker.
I feel like there's so many guys right now, like let's say on the WWE, you have a guy like Adam Rose who I think, you know, or Fandango, they debut and you can't help but kind of think about them as sort of comedy. And I think, you know, to complement that, why not put them with some type of, you know, silent power dude to add some legitimacy to them.
Yeah.
And turn them into some type of tag team.
I think tag teams, I mean, that's a great role for guys that are not ready for that singles push right out of the gate. And you put them in a tag team, they're hidden, and it can work really well. And then you get to the point where you can split them.
Yeah.
Mike Sharp attacks Hayes from behind. They double team Hayes in the corner. Ben is then choking on Hayes. David picks up a cowbell to start getting the crowd cheering for Hayes. Mike applies a bear hug to Hayes as they're working him over. Crowd shots of the fans were just awesome here. They're all chanting for Hayes. Hayes fights out of it. He's selling on the mat, but in comes Steele, and he applies a sleeper knee to the face, and then Steele misses a running knee in the corner. Both are down, and Hayes makes the hot tag to Terry Gordy. Gordy then runs shoulder first into the post when Tom Steele moves out of the way. Gordy then tags in David, who is in with Mike Sharp. Ben runs in. Everyone's fighting into the ring. Crowd is just electric here. And then David Von Erich hits the big running knee a la Daniel Bryan, and he pins Mike Sharp. This thing went 18 minutes. And the crowd just losing their shit here as David with clearly Kenta was a David Von Erich fan.
Yeah, obviously.
Flying also, knee to the face.
Yeah, also a BJ Penn.
Yeah, that too.
Huge.
So they become the six-man tag champions, and Mercer is interviewing the winners, and David then says he knows that Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy would have done the exact same thing if they were in his spot, and he is relinquishing his portion of the title to give to their brother, Buddy Roberts, because they are quality people.
How nice.
Oh, man.
I kept waiting for these titles to show up. Where were these six-man tag team titles?
They might have been the weather was bad. I'm sure they had a tough time delivering the titles to Reunion Arena that night.
Sure.
But, I mean, this territory would be based around these six-man warring factions coming out of this show, and having the titles there were a great reason for it.
I love trios matches. I mean, I think they're often any type of match can be good, but they're exciting. My big question that I had throughout this entire match was, how old was Rosa Mendez at the time of this show?
Well, let's look it up.
1982, with a strapping Michael Hayes in his prime, in his physical prime.
To find out how old La Rosa was, she would have been 3.
Awesome.
So there's your stat for the day.
Awesome.
Mercer is then with referee David Manning to explain how the next match is going to work. I couldn't believe this. We go all the way back to 1982, and we're reviewing a pole match.
Maybe the first pole match.
This might have been. This is the earliest pole match I've ever heard of.
Wow.
And sounded just as goddamn confusing as the current incarnations.
It probably wouldn't be the first. Like, if you ask Dave Meltzer, he'll probably tell you 1985.
Top 15 pole matches. Well, Tom Jenkins had an unofficial pole match.
Somebody just left the pole next to the ring and all of a sudden became a pole match.
It's going to make a dirty Rose Mendez joke, but I'm not going to. So David Manning, he was a very popular referee. Everyone loved this guy. He was like the, you know, the the referee, everyone always, just the familiar face. But a guy explaining the stipulations of a match.
Here tonight with David Manning, before we have the pole match for $10,000. David, I want you, you're the referee, and I want you to explain just exactly how this pole match works.
Well, Bill, we're starting out with about, I believe, 16 or 18 guys in the ring. A man can be eliminated by being pinned, thrown over the top rope, or if he wants to submit. There's going to be a lot of action going on in the ring. There's one referee on the floor to make sure if one referee doesn't see with this many men someone get thrown over the top, he's there to make sure he leaves. The match will continue until there's only three wrestlers left in the ring. At that time, say there's four left. When that man's eliminated, the fourth one, the match will be stopped. These three men now have a chance for the $10,000. We'll take the $10,000, put it at the top of that pole. Now then, the object changes. It's whoever, they don't have to eliminate down to one man. Whoever climbs that pole is going to get the $10,000. They can all three go for it at once, one at the time, whatever. But it's really exciting if you've never seen a pole match. A lot of wild things happen. They're all going to be going for that $10,000. Never know. One guy might just pin the other two and then walk up there and get it nice and freely. But I haven't seen that happen yet. I got a feeling it's going to be right down to the wire.
So in a sense, it's sort of a no disqualification. Anything you can do to get rid of a guy, you can do in this match.
Well, that's right, Bill. Even though it doesn't say there's no disqualification on notice on the program, using in a match like this, if a man does something that really, you know, betrays the rules or whatever, we will disqualify him and eliminate him from the match. These things can get kind of wild, as you know. Here you got most of Hart's men involved. You got Devastation Incorporated, Bundy in there, and everybody knows his greed. So anything can happen. You got Von Erich. The Von Erich brothers are going to be in there. So it's going to be wild and exciting. A lot of times, two or three guys may team up and eliminate this guy and eliminate that guy and build it right down and maybe split the cash at the end. And there's a lot of things can happen. We never know.
I was confused listening to this guy, and I knew what the match was. He says how pins or submissions can eliminate somebody, or you can go over the top rope. We're going to have multiple referees. Then it comes down to the final three, and it becomes a pull match for $10,000. And then Bill Mercer says, and we should also mention there are no DQs, to which David Manning clarifies, well, that's subjective based on how bad of an act someone commits in the final three to determine if we can DQ them or not. They're allowed to get away with some stuff, but nothing crazy, essentially. And he also says it's going to feature 16 or 18 wrestlers. You know, that ballpark.
Yeah, about that much.
So we had the announcer introduced everyone. We had the Spoiler, Checkmate, Captain Frank Dussek, Ben Sharp, Tom Steele, King Kong Bundy, Wild Bill Irwin, Mike Sharp, Ken Mantell, Bugsy McGraw, Al Madrill, Jose Lothario, David Von Erich, Brian Adias, and the Magic Dragon, and they would compete in the $10,000 pole match.
What a list of names.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it's like a Wu-Tang Clan.
It really is.
The Magic Dragon.
The Magic Dragon. Unreal here. I assumed, because I haven't seen this show ever before, I just assumed David would win or be right down to the... He was the first guy out. No fanfare. Just dumped over the top and he's out.
He already wrestled that night.
This was just so weird. Like when
you're tired.
Could you imagine John Cena in a six-man opener coming back and dumped out first to Frank Dussek?
Maybe he was confused about the rules and he thought you could only be pinned.
Well, maybe he listened to David Manning explain the rules and he thought the first man over the top rope wins the $10,000.
Maybe
he thought it was a
reverse battle rule.
First man standing match. I don't know.
First man laying match.
I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, David was out right away. Bunch of guys get on top of King Kong Bundy, but the referee is not there in time to count a pinfall. Bugsy McGraw drop kicks him from behind, and Bundy goes over the top to the outside. Ben Sharp is out next. Then Lothario and Checkmate eliminate each other.
How about a... Sorry, I'm just very distracted and kind of tired.
Are you drunk?
I'm not. This is a light beer. This is a 4.9%.
No, what did I just have?
Anyway, I just had the most brilliant idea.
Okay,
for a match
go for it.
And this is all going to go into our promotion that we're going to theoretically make someday.
Last man sitting match?
No.
Oh.
Last man. Oh, sorry. First man standing match. Wait, did I mess that
up? Would they both start in a standing position? Would they be like wheeled out and then first guy to stand?
I messed that up. Let's edit this.
No. We're live. Oh, bananas. No, we're live.
Let me tell my
terrible joke that I've already messed up. Here's my brilliant idea. Last man laying match.
The last man laying. So the first man laying.
No.
Would be eliminated?
No. So you start the match off on your back. There's two people on their backs. And then it's like a war of,
patience.
Patience, yeah. Who will be so uncomfortable? This could go on for days. You know, who could withstand the discomfort? I mean, first you have to withstand the comfort, okay? But then comfort might turn into discomfort.
Yeah.
And who can be the first one to get up? Could even be years.
Could you sleep?
Yeah, of course. Sleep? Yeah, you could do anything. You can live the
rest. I would feel you need to be conscious because it's kind of cheating if you sleep.
Yeah, but even if you sleep, at some point you'll get sick of it. You'll be like, okay, I've been laying down in this ring for like a week. I need to stand up. I need to feel what it's like to be vertical again.
It's like those car contests where you got to touch a car and the last one to stop touching the car.
It goes on forever.
Yeah.
So that's my
go on for days.
So that's my idea: a last man laying mat.
Wow. Well, you'd need some significant satellite time if this were a pay per view.
Yeah. Sure. We'll have that.
Would that be the whole promotion would be based around these matches?
Yeah, but
that'd be maybe the big blow off match of the year.
Yeah, last man laying match. Yeah.
Oh boy.
We'll cut all that out.
Nope.
We'll cut all that out.
Frank Dussick is thrown out by Ken Mantell. Spoilers then sent over the top and out. Pretty like just elimination after elimination. Bugsy McGraw eliminates Bill Irwin. Mike Sharp sends Bugsy McGraw over the top. And just the slowest motion ever as he goes over the top rope here. Brian Adidas turns a scoop slam into a pin and eliminates Magic Dragon by pinfall. Madrill then eliminates Tom Steele. It's down to Al Madrill, Brian Adidas, Ken Mantell, and Mike Sharp.
Adidas. You said Adidas.
Bill Mercer called him Adidas too during this as well by mistake.
Right? Okay.
Got to remember, it's not the shoe. This wasn't even his real name. They came up with Brian Adidas. That's a great name.
Probably saw the shoe and said, oh.
So Adidas and Mantell dump out Al Madrill together, and they cut to a break as they come back with the final three, Adidas, Mantell, and Mike Sharp. And they all gun for the pole. They pull down Sharp. Then Adidas tries to climb. The crowd is shrieking for him. Sharp and Adidas fight by the pole after Mantell is sent over the top to the apron but is not eliminated. Sharp then sends Adidas over the top, and Ken Mantell runs up the pole from behind them, kicks Sharp off the pole, and grabs the check. There's a literal check for $10,000 just hanging there.
Well, what else is there? What else would you do? The cash?
I guess. It was just funny to see this actual dangling check. So Ken Mantell holds up the check for everyone to see. He speaks to Bill Mercer. He says this is a great Christmas present. He didn't think he would have a chance given the quality of guys in this match. And this has just made for a great Christmas for his family during these tough economic times.
Well, that's nice.
$10,000.
I feel like money is not used enough as an incentive to motivate people to win matches these days. I mean, even like a Money in the Bank, which started off being about, you know, a title shot, but also what's a dollar figure that the Money in the Bank was supposed to be for? Didn't they ever attach money to
it? No, it was always the title shot.
Oh, okay. So why call it Money in the Bank?
Because it's a metaphor for what this future title shot is.
I always thought it came with like a cash prize, but
no.
Okay, fine.
That was the XFL.
Okay.
They competed for money.
But I guess like money prize is not as personal nor as dramatic.
I don't think fans get behind a monetary gain for a wrestler.
What if it was like 50,000?
WWE Network royalties on a pull match.
Yeah, what if it was like, okay, yeah, sure. You downside.
Video game licensing deal for the bottom half of the roster, who the winner gets into the video game and thus gets the royalties.
I suppose because like to win a cash prize can be kind of boring if the guy's just going to invest it, you know, which is probably what they do.
Each week we get videos of how his stocks are doing and his investments.
No, that's
how
boring.
Liquid his assets are.
You want to know what the guy's going to spend on. Like this Mantell dude, I wanted to know what he was going to spend the $10,000 on. He just said, oh, it'd make a nice Christmas for my family. That's boring. Spend it on, like, strippers, you know? I'm going to spend it on drugs, strippers. I'm going to go on a shooting spree.
Well, the booker of world class up until this night was Gary Hart. And right after this show, because of his payoff, Gary Hart quit as the booker after this massive angle was shot. And you know who replaced him as the booker?
Stripper?
Ken Mantell.
Oh, okay.
Who kind of did win the lottery, getting to inherit this promotion that was about to explode.
Wow, cool.
Mercer does a wrap-up of the matches we've seen, and next week we'll feature the Ric Flair, Kerry Von Erich, actually not next week, it would really air, I think, 2 days after, NWA title match, so that's next week, wraps up this show. But
how frequent were these NWA title matches in a territory like World Class?
Oh, infrequently. I mean, it was rare that, you know, the champion would come to your territory and face the top heel or the top babyface, and so it wasn't a regular occurrence.
It's a huge deal.
You would build up for your territory to peak with the NWA champion.
How many times
in
a year would you say? Twice? Three times?
Yeah. It would range based on the territory. I mean, obviously, in a St. Louis where you're going to do considerably more business, you come a lot more often.
That's really cool. And I feel like, you know, I mean, these days you get a title match every single week, it feels like. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, like if
it was a big deal. Just the champion coming to town was a huge deal.
I mean, I try to figure out now if there's a way you can replicate that same type of thing where only two or three times a year, this thing gets defended. I mean, the closest thing we had was the Undertaker streak. But beyond that, can the WWE, for instance, create something that, you know, is so special, it only gets defended a couple, three times a year maybe?
Yeah, I don't know if you could really pull that off today. I mean, the closest they came to that was during the brand split when they had the champion that was kind of...
But even that was every month.
Yeah, it was like 1 month he would be on one brand, then he'd switch to the other.
But that didn't feel special at all because you at least got to see a title match every night, if not sometimes on a Raw. Can't, you know, how about the...
Okay, well, here's the idea is if you do end up going with Brock Lesnar as champion... That's what you would be forced to have to do, where Brock is only going to defend that title every couple of months, and he's not on TV every week.
They'll never do that. You know, they would have to make the IC title the house show title, the TV title, you know, the monthly title.
But would it not mean more then when you do that big title match?
Yeah, of course.
So do you mortgage, you know, people are buying the network regardless. It's not like we have to do a number on pay-per-view every month that we build to that big pay-per-view where the world's champion appearing and defending his title becomes a big event.
I mean, I would personally love it, but I just think that for them and their responsibility to investors and TV ratings and all that, I feel like they'll never do that, you know? We're in the area of a TV title – or sorry, a title match every single week. Like, look at TNA. We have a title match every single week. You know, we just burn through all this stuff. I don't think that – they're willing to exercise that patience unless they have to.
I think it would be worth trying myself.
I would
I'd
too.
Be open
I
to it.
I think that'd be great.
Because I think more now, I think people buy tickets to the house shows just to see the WWE. I don't think the champion being there matters.
How about this? Instead of taking that title and, get, you know, let's say having Brock Lesnar win the Undisputed Championship, you make a new championship that's even bigger than the World Championship. You make like a...
The
Universal title.
Oh,
it has precedence over the other one. This is the actual one that you want.
Well, then what's the point of the WWE title then?
Well, it's still a big, important title, just not
the
world's biggest title.
Bows down to the universe.
The galaxy title. Let's not burn through it, okay? Well, the galaxy title.
Well, the universe is the buzzword. You got to incorporate the universe.
Fine. But you want to start
the
with
master of the universe
the
title.
The solar system title. Then you can have the universe title.
Yeah, and maybe you could delineate and have like the Pluto title, the Mercury title.
It'll get to that point eventually.
You realize there's a couple of wrestlers named after Pluto. We got Saturn, we got Mercury. There's no Pluto.
There's no Mars.
I guess there's no Jupiter. Okay, well, let's move on. There was an MMA promotion called Mars.
Oh yeah, cool, great, nice.
Fuck. December 28th, 1982. I think my friend Brad was born on this day.
Well, happy, what a
birth.
Present. Yeah, what a present.
He was born the day this three-day-old title match aired on television in Dallas.
It was meant to be.
Bill Mercer does the intro and tees up the NWA title match for tonight. How are you feeling by this point? Because I spread out these viewings. You watched them back to back to back. Were
I
you
was
hitting
fine.
Burnout here?
No, I was in a groove. I had a large ice cap from Tim Hortons.
Oh, boy.
So I had a combination of sugar and caffeine to guide me through.
We're just going to break down the fourth wall here and explain. It is Monday right now at like 7:30 p.m.
It's not the fourth wall.
The fourth mic.
Okay.
The
fourth wall would be us talking to the audience, which is what we do.
Okay, I was just trying to use a metaphor. I wasn't trying to be literal. 7:30 p.m., we are going to finish this show, and then you're going to race home to watch Raw for 3 hours and do another podcast. Jeez. Your day has been nothing but watching and talking wrestling today.
That's true, but that's the life I chose.
With great power comes shitty responsibilities.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least I have the day off tomorrow.
That's true.
I worked over the weekend, so yeah. So we have the day off tomorrow, which I'll use to not watch any wrestling. I might watch the old Divas.
Yeah, that'd be worth watching.
Yeah.
All right, so we got Bill Mercer. They show some highlights of the last time these two had a match in the same arena, and it was a best 2 out of 3 falls match where the referee is down, Von Erich's beating down on Flair. He applies a sleeper. David Manning comes into the ring, and the bell rings as the sleeper is applied, and everyone thinks that Kerry has won the fall, but they do the dusty finish where Von Erich ended up losing by DQ after he accidentally knocked down the first referee. Second fall, Kerry has the claw applied and pins Flair, so it's even going into the third fall as Flair is all bloody. He's taking punches, and the referee calls for the bell because of all the blood. And it's a double DQ, and thus Ric Flair keeps the title. And this was why he was called the uncrowned champion after this match, where many felt Kerry got fucked in this match and should have won the title.
Yeah. Wow, look at all this blood.
No, it's too much.
He's going to clean this up. Call the match.
We got interviews from both. Kerry Von Erich, who feels great about tonight. He says, Reunion Arena is the hot spot of the country right now, and the air is electrified. Which, thank God, was not true.
Yeah.
Because that would be fatal.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, Bill, I feel great about tonight. You know, I got all my friends here. I'm mentally ready and physically ready. And, Bill, I can't wait. I'm really excited. You know, Reunion Arena is the hot spot of the country right now. And it's Ric Flair versus Kerry Von Erich. And it's very exciting to me. And the air is just electrified out there right now. The people, you can feel the tension. And the people are ready, and I'm looking forward to getting in that cage.
Kerry Von Erich, what did you think of his interview?
Man,
like, he was a notoriously terrible promo, but he was a promo that people loved this guy.
They loved the family. They loved the character, if you could call it that. But, you know, putting him here back-to-back with Ric Flair on the microphone really showed how he at least seemed very inexperienced. I obviously see much younger, not a tenth of the refined promo that Ric Flair is. Ric Flair.
But I almost think for him, like, he wouldn't have worked in, like, you know, some fast talker or witty.
No, but he would have to find his own style.
This guy was a jock that these girls loved.
Okay, sure, you're right. He's just this good looking guy who maybe doesn't have much of a personality, but yes, he's very good looking. I suppose so. I will say, though,
I will go so far. He was a very attractive man.
Yeah, so will I. Yeah, definitely. Come on. Yeah, anyway. But I will say both have just magnificent hair.
Yes.
Both men.
This was 1982 at its finest.
Just fluffy, coiffed hair. Like, just beautiful locks, both men.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dreamy. Flair says to Von Erich that Kerry and his family have put themselves in a do-or-die situation. One man's going to walk out champion, and diamonds are forever, and so is Ric Flair. The big woo at the end. Man, was this guy just hitting on all cylinders in 1982.
Do you think he ever gets sick of being, like, you know, himself? Because he's been playing this character for, I mean, his...
He's not playing a character.
Okay, I guess you're right.
This guy was toned down. Most people, it's like you turn the volume up, you turn the volume down, I think, in some cases.
Yeah.
So they both make their entrances, like, just the feel of a huge match.
I love the idea of, like, Pusha T
watching this as a child and getting really into it and, like, you know, wooing and then one day saying, ah, I want to be like this guy. I'm going to woo in my rap songs.
So because of the chicanery of Ric Flair and this bounty, the Von Erichs were able to get this to be a steel cage match, and they were going to hold a vote to get a second referee in. The fans were going to get to vote on who would be the second referee to join David Manning, and the fans voted for Michael Hayes, the close friend of the Von Erichs, to be that second referee. And Hayes announces that he's bringing out Terry Gordy to watch the door outside from the floor so that nothing illegal happens in this match. And all the cards were stacked against Ric Flair. And it was this idea, if you were a fan, how can Kerry lose? He's got every corner covered that Ric Flair could cheat his way to victory with. Mm-hmm. And that was our setup here. Crowd is just electric here as the match starts. Von Erich goes after the left leg of Ric. It's all Ric selling early in the match. Flair and Hayes start arguing. Hayes shoves him away. And then Von Erich applies a sleeper. Huge reaction, but Flair suplexes out. Flair goes for a cover. Both refs go down to count two, which looked a little bizarre. Flair gets sent into the cage twice, and then Kerry rings his face across the fencing to bust open Ric, and the crowd just disgusted here by this man's blood leaking onto the canvas. Hayes is just getting incredibly aggressive here, breaking up both guys during holds. David Manning is trying to calm Hayes down. Von Erich starts favoring his right knee, which is the one he had surgery on. He blocks a figure four, then gets sent into the cage. Flair then gets the figure four applied. Kerry eventually reverses it and escapes. Kerry then goes after the right knee of Flair. Flair gets his trunks pulled down as he's climbing up the fence. And then Flair comes off the top into the claw. But Hayes senses that Ric got his foot underneath the rope and he wants the claw broken, to which Manning is saying he doesn't have to break it. And this led to Hayes grabbing Kerry by the hair and, like, putting his foot on his spine to pull Kerry Von Erich off. And the fans are just in stunned disbelief here. What is Michael Hayes doing here? And he's getting all upset. The crowd boos. Flair attacks Kerry from behind, and Michael Hayes just loses it, and he knocks down Ric Flair with a punch and is pleading with Kerry to pin Flair. But Kerry will not win like that. He's not going to take advantage here of Michael Hayes and his attack on Flair. So Gordy opens the door, and Hayes goes to leave. And then Flair knocks Kerry down, and as Kerry is draped on the second rope, Terry Gordy slams the cage door on Kerry Von Erich's head, and this crowd cannot believe what they have just seen. The angle of all angles here. And Ric goes to cover him, and Kerry kicks out at two. So many people thought that was the finish, but Kerry actually kicked out here. Hayes leaves the ring with Terry Gordy, and it's Flair beating down on Kerry. Kerry keeps kicking out. He's all groggy from the steel cage door shot. He hits his last ditch of effort. He hits a discus punch to Ric, and David Manning is checking on Kerry Von Erich. He's out, and he calls for the stoppage and rules Ric Flair the winner here because Kerry cannot continue due to his head injury, and they blame it on the door shot. Just an unreal reaction here from this crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a very interesting finish. You know, it ended up not being a real finish at all, but I feel like it was quite brilliant in the fact that it managed to spin off an actual storyline without the use of a champion. So, you know, basically you only have somebody like Ric Flair and the NWA World title only a couple times of the year. What are you going to do the rest of the time? Why not use this opportunity to spin off into your own feud? And that's what they managed to do here to great effect, I thought.
Kevin and David Von Erich come to check on their brother. David gets on the mic, cuts a promo on Gordy and Hayes as they are helping him out. Mercer states that Gordy and Hayes, they are no longer friends of the Von Erichs. The fans are chanting, "You're number one! You're number one!" as they help carry out. And
they didn't chant bullshit?
No, they chanted, "You're number one."
She's a crack whore.
Mercer recaps the match, the key moments with the rope break, the door shot, and then it's Mercer on camera to end the show, really hitting the angle hard and the possibility that Kerry Von Erich might have a concussion. And this would be the angle that would take this territory from drawing 1,500 every week at the Sportatorium to selling out with 4,000 people every week. And the Von Erichs and Freebirds were pretty much off to the races. And it would be this territory just blew up after this angle.
Yeah, really cool. And, you know, just you could just tell just from my limited experience from watching this that just how special and just how over this Von Erich family were as babies.
Unlike
faces.
Anything you couldn't appreciate this today.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's no one at this level to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed these shows, man.
I loved going back to watch these. I would love to watch some in the future once you upgrade your computer.
Despite all my hassles with the network, once I got into the shows, I really got into them. And in particular, I just loved how every show managed to focus on this one big thing and it made it feel very important. You know, like a very special, rare occasion that you would get a title match between your top babyface in the territory and the national champion.
It's the argument I always make when a pay-per-view is coming up. Like, here we are. We're, like, 2.5 weeks away from ROH's pay-per-view. We're 1.5 weeks away from Slammiversary. You know, like, two matches for each card.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it doesn't feel special. Doesn't feel like an event. Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair was established weeks and weeks ago. And the reason you do that is because now you have all this time for fans to anticipate it and await it and really want to see this match rather than it's just thrown out and announced on TV and you got a week to just get ready for it. I mean, this was – you had all these wrestlers giving their predictions. It's like you couldn't wait for this match to happen because it's been told to you week after week how important it is.
I really do hate continually bringing up MMA comparisons, but – that's what we get with MMA these days. I mean, somebody like John Jones would only fight maybe 2-3 times a year, and every time he does so, it's special. And the matches get announced way earlier, and you know you have time to anticipate it. You have the opinions of other fighters weighing in on the matches. That's why I feel like the UFC is so successful on pay-per-view.
I would say though that by them running so many shows now that you almost. Like, everything blurs together that now it's like, okay, all of a sudden we've got this pay-per-view coming up in a week, and you're focusing on the next card, and all of it kind of just gets jumbled together. And I think that with so much, mm-hmm. you can't put that singular focus outside of a big show where, like, Rousey and Weidman are both on the same show. That feels like a big show.
Yeah, but think about it if, somebody like Chris Weidman defended the title every single week. At least now you know that Weidman versus Machida or Ronda Rousey is fighting on a certain date.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. But these were real fun shows to watch, and one of the most famous angles, I would say, in wrestling history at Reunion Arena that night with the Freebirds and the Von Erichs. So we'll do some short feedback. We got a grand total of two here from Jeremy Samples, who first writes, these first three episodes of World Class were interesting in that each was presented in a different style. I enjoyed the first episode the best, as it was the go-home studio show. It's interesting to look at this show and how the SmackDown pre-show is presented today. You essentially have the host in a studio setting, clips from past matches, and an interview or two advancing the angles. This is something that could really be capitalized on as WWE considers a main studio show for the summer. I really enjoyed Flair's promo against Fritz, as you could feel the animosity between each just from the split screen interview. WWE has tried this out with Heyman in a split screen, although he wasn't feeding off anyone except for Josh Matthews. Do you think this style could work today? The second episode felt like the opener of a special event. Couldn't really get into either match, although some points that stick out were the consistent boots to the face that Madrill delivered and the fact that a referee actually explained a match stipulation. Third episode was the payoff to a feud I really enjoyed seeing between Flair and the Von Erichs. It was interesting to me as Flair has always been my favorite, and I had never seen this great stuff from World Class. Neat to see how Michael Hayes played his referee spot into the great feud between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. Thanks for reviewing shows like this, as I would have never taken advantage of the network and watched these otherwise.
I wonder if that style of presentation would work today. Because
you need the right people, the right issue, I think. It's just we've seen tons of pro wrestling promos where they make it feel real, and you have others where it feels anything but.
Uh-huh.
I think you have to have the right people.
But do you think there's an expectation from the audience for bigger production, you know, higher production value, more than just a split screen, more kind of extravagant scenarios for these
these feuds to occur?
I don't think in the case. I think if you were to do two guys joining us via satellite.
Do you think people would see that and get bored and flip the channel?
No, not at all. I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know.
Ronaldo from Milan, Italy. I remember buying a WCCW compilation tape when I was 14 or so and going, hey, that's the Texas Tornado. Years later, I had the opportunity to watch hours and hours of it and loved every minute. Nowadays, if you look into a crowd, you'll spot maybe two or three individuals following the match while the rest is too busy trying to get a good pick with their phones while posting on Facebook about how good that pick is going to be. In Texas, people believed. No one gave two fucks about work rate or five-star matches. All they wanted was for the Von Erichs to kick the crap out of the Freebirds and make it a moment for the ages. It's kind of amusing how people often romanticize old-school pro wrestling, but if you take a legit look at the old territory days, especially this territory, you get why pro wrestling was perceived as much more than a circus back in the day. Great memories.
All right. Well, a handful of you went back and watched these, so we appreciate it. And that's going to bring an end to the show. Fun review to go back and watch these three episodes of World Class. And I'm sure sometime down the road we will take a look at some more World Class and maybe the fallout from this angle, especially going into that 1983 period. But for next week, Wei, we teased it last week on the show. What are we going to be chatting? And who will we be chatting with?
We will be joined by somebody who appeared last week, who was Gordon on this show.
Yes, didn't know he was on the show.
Mr. Damian Abraham from the Men Fucked Up, who is releasing an album this week.
That's true.
So we'll be talking to him. And he chose earlier today. I know we had said asked him to choose an ROH show, but he ended up choosing a show that, or at least a match, that was very important to him, or at least he wanted to really talk about and for us to watch. And I was interested in this too. It's Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher. This took place on June 11th, 2005, on an IWA Mid-South show called Something to Prove. And I realized that almost none of you will be able to, most of you will not be able to see this show. But however, if you just simply Google Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe, you'll be able to find this match on a number of sites. And this is a match that apparently I haven't seen it, but it's gotten a ton of talk as, you know, kind of one of the more notable independent wrestling matches of the past decade. So I look forward to watching that. And at the very least, even if you don't, we won't even be able to watch the whole show. We'll really just be watching three of the shows. So three matches on the show, which I'm actually kind of happy for. We'll be watching Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher as well. CM Punk is on the show taking on Homicide. And we have a women's match between Allison Danger, Nikki Knuckles, and Mischief from this show. So we'll be talking about that. And we'll be just shooting the shit with Damien. Watch, at the very least, Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher. It's a 24-minute match. And actually, it's probably maybe even more than that. But whatever, however long it is, watch it, leave your thoughts, because that's really kind of what we'll be talking about next.
All right, our first IWA Mid-South review will be next week, and we'll put up the thread early. And you can either leave feedback, and maybe we'll open it up to questions as well, since we have Damian coming on, if you'd like us to discuss any random topics. So sure. We'll put that thread up this week on the Law message board. And as always, you can get our shows at liveaudiowrestling.com. We've got the Law up from Sunday night, the full 25-minute interview with Frankie Kazarian is posted. Some very interesting stuff from him regarding his exit from TNA, as well as review a Raw from Monday night's show. So all of that is there. I am at I am John Pollock. Wei is at Wei0937. And to go out here, Wei, let's go out with maybe some, what would be a good theme?
You tell me.
Let's go out with the theme song that Kerry Von Erich used to always come out to.
Which was what?
As they introduced commercial music.
What song is this?
I'll turn it up.
Do you not even tell me the name of it?
It's playing right now.